Ms. Alexander, do you want to reserve a portion of your 15 minutes?
Yes, sir. I respectfully request 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right. Well, you have the 3 minutes for rebuttal, and for everyone who is not used to being before the court, each side has 15 minutes for argument, and appellant may reserve a certain amount of, in this case, 3 minutes for rebuttal. So you may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court. My name is Brooke Alexander. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Jamila Bernie Divins. This matter comes before this court on an appeal from the Workers' Compensation Commission on the question of whether an automobile accident arises out of Ms. Divins' employment. The deputy commissioner and the full commission decided that it did not. And the appellant assigns error for 3 reasons to this mixed question of law and fact on whether the rollover accident was arising out of her employment. Her employment. One assignment of error is the misapplication of the PYA Monarch case to Ms. Divins as an unexplained accident. 2, the misapplication of facts to prove an idiopathic condition. And 3, that advancing 2 theories of liability undermines these uncontradicted facts. In these types of cases, the claimant must prove 3 different things for her workers' compensation claim. First, that the injury was caused by an accident. Second, that it was in the course and scope of her employment.
We don't have any dispute over that.
No, Your Honor. The first 2 prongs of that test, obviously the injury, she suffered a very significant injury to her back and other body parts, was clearly a result of the rollover accident. And I don't think there was any dispute on the record or in the medical evidence of that. And the second prong, of course, the course and scope of her employment was stipulated at hearing. So then the only question is whether or not it arises out of her employment. So we'll start with the commission's reliance on PYA Monarch, because I think this is an important point. The claimant must prove this arising out of prong, and there is an important aspect of the prong which shows a causal connection to the employment. And now the facts of PYA Monarch, which was relied upon not only by the deputy commissioner but also in the full commission's opinion, is a factually different case than our scenario. This is an unexplained fall. And what we have in PYA Monarch is a gentleman that was driving a truck who stops at a gas station. He gets opens the door, stands up, and reaches for the grab bar. His next memory is when he wakes up and he's laying on the pavement near the truck.
Didn't we say, I mean, we took some pains, or we've taken some pains in a number of cases to limit PYA Monarch to the specific facts of that case. And I'm thinking about the city of Waynesboro case. I'm thinking about the Turf Care versus Henson case, but primarily Liberty Mutual versus Herndon.
Yes.
And in Liberty Mutual, we said the problem with PYA Monarch is that we don't know whether the person was injured when he fell from the truck or whether he maybe tripped over his shoelaces once he got out of the truck and down to the solid ground. Is this case different from that? Do we know what caused the injury to the individual, not what caused the accident?
Yes, and I think Your Honor makes a very excellent point about the Liberty Mutual case, which I know Your Honor knows is a 2012 Court of Appeals case. And here's the difference in Ms. Divins' action. She is driving a motor vehicle, and based on the evidence presented, it's very clear that she is driving to a meeting from a doctor's appointment. As I'm sure you're aware, she had a prior compensable injury from an August 20th, about a month prior, had been in another motor vehicle accident for work where she injured her back. So in this case, on the same morning that this happened, she had gone to her appointment with the permission of her employer for that injury. She went home to pick up her state car and was driving directly to a meeting with her supervisor, Gerald Washington. So the difference with PYA and then what is similar to the Liberty case is this aspect of a causal connection directly to the employment. And as you pointed out,
one of the other big differences between those two is that PYA Monarch didn't involve the street risk doctrine.
Correct.
It was simply a fall case. And the street risk doctrine really changes things, because I can't think of what is not a compensable injury if you're driving a car.
Exactly. I think that's an excellent point, especially in Ms. Divins' case, because the full commission pointed out, well, you know, a a deer could have run in front of her car, or she could have overcorrected, or another car could have come in her lane. Well, any of those items would have been found to be compensable. So the only portion that's a problem is that she's saying, well, I don't know how the car began flipping. But the issue is that the car did begin flipping, and she's moving on a public highway, and the only reason that she is in that position is because she is heading to a meeting with her employer. She's not on a lunch break. She's not taking a personal detour, as some of these other workers' comp cases have.
But if you take that argument to its logical conclusion, anytime she's driving, if she's driving because of her work and she has an accident, even if it has absolutely nothing to do with her work, you end up with a compensable accident, that it arises out of her work. Why in this situation, if the commission is the fact finder, looked at this, and I know I'm taking you through your assignments of error, but if the commission as fact finder looked at this and said, you know, we don't have any real medical evidence beyond her testimony that her vision just tunneled down, and that's the last thing she recalls. They don't seem to really believe that in the end, or that is the cause of it. And if the commission is the fact finder in the judgment of credibility, and we have all sorts of case law saying that we as an appellate court can't overturn a credibility determination or fact-finding unless it's just plainly wrong, where do we go from there?
Well, Your Honor, the problem with that position is that there is not an issue of credibility, and there's not a difference in facts in the case. We don't have conflicting facts about what she said happened or what she didn't say happened. There wasn't additional eyewitness testimony.
It's conceded here that she was within the scope of employment, that she was driving on behalf of her employer in a job-related function. Would that be fair?
That is fair, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Now that I've helped you out a little bit, let me throw you a harder one. How do you deal with Hill versus Southern Tank, where there was a truck driver? He last thing he remembers is he stopped to check his tires or something. Miles and miles and miles down the road, the truck is found wrecked, and he has no idea what's happened, and we did not apply the actual street risk rule.
Well, in that case, Your Honor, you have a situation where the last thing he remembers is changing the tire outside of his vehicle. And it's very, and think of that in terms of the similarities with PYA Monarch, in that we have a gentleman stepping out of his vehicle, and then he ends up on the ground, but we don't have any sense of how we got there. And there's multiple different reasons of how he could have arrived in that position. In Ms. Divin's case, the only way that she got injured is that her car flipped. That is the causation. I mean, her injuries resulted from a flipping.
What we don't know is what caused her to veer off the road and flip the car.
Correct. But the point with the veering off the road is if she had articulated, I'm losing my vision and I felt the car drift off the road, that would have been compensable. She's only missing that, you know, I my vision gets tunneled and then
but
I don't.
But isn't that the critical link in the case to provide that information verification? And I'll tell you quite frankly, I went through this and I talked with my law clerk about it, and it seemed like the one critical element that is at the foundation for what caused the accident was this vision issue that then caused her to be injured, and she's in the scope of her employment. The one step that's missing is there being some sort of connection between the two. And the questions were asked, but that answer was never given. How do you deal with that from our responsibility to defer to the commission's factual finding standpoint?
Of course, Your Honor. Well, I think you look at those cases, the Liberty case and some of these other cases where it was found to be compensable, and the claimant in those cases specifically said, for example, in Liberty, I don't know what happened. He couldn't say that he fell. He said, I was carrying wood, and then the next thing we know, he ends up in the basement at the bottom of this unfinished structure. So what we're hanging our head on here is this statement of, I don't know how the accident happened, but look at what she did know. She is in her car. She's not outside of her car.
But in those cases that support you, what happened in those cases is that somebody else or some other witness was able to provide some evidence, some circumstance, some facts to suggest what really did happen. The case where the person is on the roof and they fall off, the other person says, yes, I saw what happened. He got tangled up and he fell straight down and there was nothing that he did wrong. Those cases seem to suggest, yes, there's corroborative evidence of what the injured individual, the claimant, was not able to simply corroborate himself. But in this case, we just don't have that extra witness or that hook that allows us to get there.
But I think the difference is, and this is important, is, again, with the motor vehicle case, it's different than a fall because the reason she's in the car and the explanation as and how we get to the arising out of has to do with the fact that she is on a mission for employer, heading to a meeting, and that's why...
Is that more related to the course of employment or arising out of?
I think it goes to both. And the fact that she's in the car and she's heading to a meeting is why she's in that position where she is. She hasn't gotten out of the car to change a tire. She hasn't stepped out of a truck.
But our cases point out that there is a critical distinction between the two elements that must be analyzed here. And if we sort of meld them together, then why do we have two standards?
Well, we're not asking you to meld them together in every case. I'm pointing to a specific instance of people that are driving very specifically for work in a motor vehicle accident where their car is moving at the time, or moving or stopped. I mean,
doesn't the street risk doctrine, as we set out in marketing profiles, basically says that driving a car on behalf of your employer is an actual risk of employment, regardless of whether or not you might be exposed to what we would otherwise consider hazards common to the neighborhood? I mean, does that succinctly say what?
Exactly, Your Honor. The point with the street risk test is, yes, everyone drives their car. You know, that might be normally considered a common hazard, but you're at a heightened risk because of the street test, because you are completing a purpose for your employer by driving that vehicle.
So to follow up on both Judge Alston's and Judge Petty's questions, does that mean that if you're driving a car for your employer, that the arising out of means no more than the in course of test?
No. If there is evidence that would show that the employee is doing something that does not arise out of the employment.
Running a private errand.
Exactly. Stopping at Chick-fil-A for a sandwich and getting rear-ended.
Sounds good.
Rear-ended, in the parking lot, or running home to pick up their child who is sick. They have left the course of, you know, the mission that they're on. It's no longer arising out of in the point of them.
But you just said in the course.
Well, I apologize, I misspoke. I mean, it's no longer...
But in some ways that seems what you're saying, though. If they're now going home to pick up their child or stopping at Chick-fil-A, they're not in the course of. It's just, I guess I'm trying to understand why arising out of, what that adds to this beyond in the course of. If just driving the car means it can arise out of or in the course of.
Sure, and I'd refer Your Honor back to that, the Liberty Mutual case, I think was an excellent analysis on the arising out of prong, and specifically discussed the motor vehicle cases with regard to the arising out of, and pointed to the Immer case, the Immer versus Brosnahan case, which I think is very similar to Ms. Dimmons' case.
You're answering my question. I appreciate it, but you've gone into your rebuttal time. If you want, you can continue or reserve.
And I'm going to ask Judge Bills not to count the skips. I want you to think about a question that I'd like to ask when you come back, and that is, if we take your analysis to its logical point, is it true that any time a person is driving their car in the scope of their employment and there is an injury that is not outside the scope of their employment, that person's entitled to recover every time? Think about that, then let me know.
All right, thank you, Your Honor.
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to ask Judge Bills to give you a couple more minutes.
Thank you.
He's a nice guy.
I was going to give you 3 minutes anyway.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Ms. Hawkins,
yes,
proceeding.
May it please the Court, I am Mary Hawkins with the Office of the Attorney General, and I represent the Employer Community Corrections Administration in the Commonwealth of Virginia in this case. There is credible evidence in the record that supports the full commission's finding that Ms. Bernie Divins did not suffer from an injury by accident arising out of her employment on September 17, 2012.
Do you agree that she was within the course of her employment?
I do agree that she was.
She's driving on behalf of her employer.
I do agree
that
she
was. The only question is whether or not this accident was within the scope of employment. Arose out of employment.
Yes, sir. Arose out of her employment.
Okay. Let me read you this quote. And again, understanding that it appears to me anyway that we have carved out, or we have basically said that driving a car is an actual risk of employment. Because we said in Emler versus Bonsam, the general applicable principles excluding coverage for unpeculiar risk common to everyone do not necessarily apply to vehicle accidents caused by ordinary street risk. We then went on to say that the street risk rule is an exception to the rule that the risk of employment must be a risk to which the common neighborhood is not exposed. The principle recognizes compensable injuries that occur in vehicular collisions while an employee is on his or her master's business. Why doesn't that answer the question?
Well, I think in this case, Your Honor, is that Ms. Bernie Divins simply isn't able to explain what happened and what caused her accident.
What difference does it make?
Well, I mean, in this case, Your Honor, she has some ideas. She saw that it was tunneling, but in some of the other cases that we have, the courts are able to make an inference, or we kind of know what may have caused the accident or what could have caused the accident.
But the distinction is that the critical issue is not unexplained fall. That's kind of a phrase we have, I think, used a little more than we should have. The critical issue is this an actual risk of employment? Or is this a risk that's common to the neighborhood? And if it's equally common to the neighborhood as it might be actual risk of employment, then you lose if you can't prove which it is. But in this case, other than a private error and a deviation from the route, something that will take her outside of the scope of the course of employment, can you give me any example of a motor vehicle crash that would not be compensable?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, if...
That would be common to the neighborhood.
That would be common.
That would not be common to the... Well, we've eliminated common to the neighborhood.
I mean, I know there's no... it contributed her negligence in this case, or in the work.
That's the affirmative defense. So we're not talking about affirmative defense. We're talking about any type of motor vehicle crash that would not be an actual risk of employment.
What if she had an epileptic seizure that... employer was not aware of while she was driving.
Well, then you would run into there. At that point, you would have the idiopathic condition that
which
she could have had.
Which would be compensable.
Right, at that point. You know, and what if, you know, she assumed that she just ran off the road on purpose or, you know, you have no reason.
That would be an affirmative defense.
Right. And she has no, but she still, in this case, she still was not able to explain if it was an idiopathic condition that caused her accident. I mean, she still has a burden.
Every one of these would be compensable.
But you still, I think, Your Honor, you still have a burden to prove that what caused your accident.
Because we got away from that in Herndon. In Herndon, the argument was, well, nobody knows why he fell through the hole in the second floor of the building. And we said, we don't care why he fell through the hole. We only care whether he fell through the hole and whether the hole was an actual risk of employment. And it seems to me that's what we've got here. Every road hazard is an actual risk of employment. So what difference does it make whether she, you know, fainted, whether a dog ran in front of her, whether a car T-boned her? All of those would be compensable.
I still believe that you still need to show what caused the accident, Your Honor. In the case that you spoke of there, I mean, that you can kind of understand or kind of know what happened. You know, that employee was up on the ladder, he fell, and the court can make an inference or can look and see that, you know, this kind of, we kind of know what happens in that situation. In this case, you know, the full commission declined to make an inference that either of the...
What the full commission did, and perhaps erroneously, is they said that you need to tell us why the accident happened, even though there is no possible common to the neighborhood explanation for this accident.
But she still has, I mean, I still go back to the fact that I still believe that she needs to prove that what happened to the accident. She's put forth multiple factual patterns as to what could have caused her accident, but she's unsure.
I'm sorry. Do you believe that this case is resolved by addressing a question of law or a question of the sufficiency of the record from a factual basis?
From a factual basis, Your Honor.
Okay, and getting back to Judge Petty's question, if that is indeed your answer, and I appreciate that, what case law would you cite to us to suggest that that call is based on essentially a factual basis and our responsibility to defer to the commission's factual determination?
Okay, well, Your Honor, I think the PA Wild Monarch case is controlling here.
Do you know that we have never relied on PA Wild Monarch in a single published case since it came out? And in fact, we have distinguished it in every single case we've dealt with, the City of Waynesboro case, the Herndon case, the Turf Care case. Every time somebody says unexplained fall and they pointed to PYA Monarch, we have said no. PYA Monarch is limited to its peculiar facts.
Right.
And in Herndon, we specifically said it's limited to its peculiar facts.
Well, I still think that there's a difference here between an unexplained fall and the unexplained car accident. In this case, I still think the commission was unable to determine that there was a causal connection between her employment and the actual injury that she had.
But just being in the car is the connection, isn't it?
I don't think that that's sufficient, Your Honor. I think that she still needs to be able to show which of her factual patterns that she produced actually caused her car accident or had caused, because she's not provided any proof as to what caused her blackout.
Quoting him, under the actual street risk rule, if the employment occasions the employee's use of the street, the risk of the street are the risk of employment.
Right. Well, in the Emmer case, the full commission made a factual finding that the claimant had blacked out as a result of a vascular condition and that the blackout had caused his accident. And there's no evidence in the record here that Ms. Bernie Divins actually blacked out. She has no recollection of what caused it.
You know, I just wasn't paying attention. My car drifted off the side of the road and hit a tree. That's compensable.
Yes, sir.
But if she said, I'm not exactly sure why it drifted off the side of the road and hit a tree, you're saying that's not compensable.
Well, the only thing that she can recall is that her vision was tunneling. She said she recalled seeing the There's Boone's Meal sign, saying that to herself. She remembers her vision tunneling. She remembers the car turning, tossing, and she remembers somebody coming to her to her car and knocking, I guess, to see if she was all right. She didn't testify that she necessarily lost consciousness or that she blacked out. And she had told at the emergency room, she had also told them that she wasn't sure what caused her accident.
Let me ask you on that. In PYA Monarch, this court does talk about and notes the fact that, in general, when an accident is unexplained and the person survives, it's not compensable. Supreme Court, and then notes the Supreme Court making that distinction, that if the person were to die, then it is generally considered compensable if it's unexplained. How do you, and I gather in PYA Monarch, you know, we refer to the Supreme Court's decision in the Pinkerton's case. How does that apply here? Just follow up with Judge Petty's question, because Judge Petty's question talks about the fact when you're behind the wheel and you're doing it as part of your job, it's different. But if it's, is your argument that essentially driving is it something that we all do anyway, and consequently, if you have an unexplained accident, you can't explain what happened, then Pinkerton's, Supreme Court decision in Pinkerton's controls, so that you would have to really probably pass away in order to get for the compensability. Is that right? Or
yes, I think you still have to be able to explain what caused the accident.
Based on Pinkerton's?
Yes.
But don't you just, the requirement that you explain what caused the injury, don't we require that in only in cases where there is both a compensable and possibly non-compensable explanation for the injury? I mean, that makes sense.
But I still go back to the fact that I think that it's a burden of proof on the claimant to show exactly, you know, what happened to her. She has no recollection. The full commission found that, you know, she was, they didn't find that she was not credible, but they found that she was not reliable in her testimony as to, you know, what happened
that day. I'm still having a problem with you. I mean, I don't think I'm not hearing the answer as to how this could possibly be non-compensable. Under what circumstances could this accident have occurred and it not be an actual risk of employment because it's an actual risk of the street?
I'm not sure how to answer that, Your Honor.
Let me ask you the inverse of the question I asked your opponent colleague. Why would it be dangerous for us to essentially develop a bright line rule that says if you're in the scope of your employment and there's an accident, it necessarily arises out of?
I know that we had the affirmative defense issue there, that there was no affirmative defense. But, you know, in that case, Your Honor, if just merely the fact that they're on the road and they're driving and they're, you know, just drive off the road on purpose, I mean, you know, is that going to be a compensable injury?
I guess taking that example that you talk about, if the person, say, and I'm not suggesting that this is your client, ma'am, but I'm just talking about examples. Suppose you've got a person that's a malingerer. And they know this rule. Hey, I'm driving my car, and I go off the road, and I say, I don't really know what caused me to go off the road, and the employer is unable to prove that this person intentionally drove off the road. Based upon the theory that we're discussing, that employee would be a claimant would be entitled to recover.
Correct. And that's where I think that the fact that they need to be able to at least prove one of their fact patterns is what caused the accident.
I can't get on the stand and say nothing, and then automatically I'm the
just because you're on the
but
street.
But that's not the facts here. I mean, the facts here are it's no question this woman was driving as a part of her employment. There's no question that the car veered off the road. She there's no question that she somehow blacked out or had tunnel vision. All of those are uncontested facts, aren't they?
Yes.
So we have in Central Lee Hospital, because the risk of injury in an automobile accident is an accepted hazard or, quote, actual risk to such travel, any injury suffered in the course of her employment while on the public streets thus also arose out of her employment.
I still think that the commission needs to be able to make some kind of inference or that they need to be able to have an understanding or some knowledge as to what caused the accident. Just merely the fact that she's driving down the road. I know we have the street risk test, but just the mere fact that she's driving out the road, like claimant's counsel had said earlier, you know, a deer could have run in front of her, or she could have had faulty brakes or a tire blowout. You know, any of those would be compensable, but we have no idea what caused her to have her accident.
Basically, what would be suggested, it's almost res ipsa loquitur. There's an accident, so therefore the employer must pay.
Right. And I still think that because the burden of proof is on the claimant by preponderance of the evidence that she sustained a compensable injury by accident, you know, if she can't provide...
You want us to overrule our street risk cases because they don't say that.
Well, I think in a lot of the street risk cases, they have an understanding or there's some inference that can be made as to what caused the accident. And there's nothing here that we could...
All of our street risk cases say any accident while driving for your employer is compensable.
I still think that the claimant needs to provide some kind of answer as to what caused the accident. Okay.
Can you go into a little bit more as to how this court has opined quite a bit in this area? Most of the cases we're referring to are from this court, but the Supreme Court less so, at least in recent years. How does Pinkerton's and the fact that I was asking about earlier and the exception, if there's a death, then it's compensable. If it's not and it's unexplained, it's not. How does that play into the street risk case?
Well, I think that if you have, like in that situation, you have the death, there's nobody there that can testify as to what could have happened. And there's some inferences that can be made, like in regard to what caused the accident. And in this case, you know, Miss Bernie Dibbins survived, and she's just been unable to explain, you know, what could have caused her accident. There's no evidence in the file that would allow us to make an inference as to what caused her accident. And I think if we expand that out, I think that just... Like Judge Austin said, that anything that meandering or anything like that, it'd be difficult for the employer to overcome that burden. That shifts the burden onto the employer at that point to show, well, they were meandering or, you know, it's just...
They'd have to come up with an affirmative defense
right.
To prevail.
Correct.
In other words, it would make the analysis that suggests that it is the claimant's burden of proof a nullity if we just assume that just because it was an accident, there is liability on the part of the employer.
Yes, sir. We ask that the commission deny Ms. Barney Davis, that this court affirm the full commission's decision denying Ms. Barney Davis benefits. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hall.
Thank you.
Ms. Alexander, you have your 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I'd like to start, obviously, Judge Alston, with answering your question since that was posed to me right before I sat down. And it was interesting to hear the reverse of the question, and I thought on that. So what we have right now is an issue where any time, and I think Judge Petty has pointed this out, someone is in an accident and they're able to articulate what it is, regardless of what that is, it's considered compensable. I mean, unless there are these other, you know, deviants or whatever.
Affirmative defenses.
Correct. You know, I was dodging a deer. Another car came over into my lane and I ran off the road. Those are compensable. And when thinking about your logic on that, are we asking you to determine that they all are? They already all are. So are we going to punish Ms. Divins because she honestly didn't say, well, my tunnel vision was going, so I ran off the road?
Well, how would you address Pinkerton? Judge Beal mentioned that case.
Well, I think that the discussion in Pinkerton's in P.Y. Monarch, it's an unexplained fall.
Pinkerton's is a woman that was driving from a relay station down some type of connecting dirt road or something to a highway, and the car was found wrecked, and she had no idea how the wreck occurred.
Right. Well, I do think it's different in this case. We have an instance where we know that the car is flipped, and we do have evidence that her vision was tunneling, which would logically explain the vehicle. You know, you can't see, the vehicle goes off the road. There's not any other deviant action, any evidence that she was doing something for her personal self, that she pulled to get food, that she was on a lunch break. The evidence is that she's in the course and scope of her employment, and that the rising out of prong is that she's on her way to this meeting, and it is so closely aligned with Immerman. I ask you to revisit that case, and in your Liberty Mutual case, I think it's important to point out a quote regarding an explanation of Immer, in which the court said, the Supreme Court held that an injury sustained by an employee on a public highway was compensable by virtue of the fact that the employer ordered the employee to see a doctor for treatment of a work-related injury and to use the roadway to that end. This is the exact same fact scenario as that case. We have Ms. Divins.
So, thinking and saying through, and I appreciate the arguments of both you and your opponent colleague, the principle that Judge Beals articulated earlier where there is a debt, there's a presumption of in the course of and arising out of. In this case, what I hear you saying is that because of the evidence presenting your client's idiopathic situation or whatever you want to call it, and her incapacity to testify puts her in close alliance with the person who passes away, and there's no explanation. She's incapable of explaining it other than providing this idiopathic situation, and so therefore that case, your case, is factually closely aligned to those cases, and you don't necessarily need a bright line rule.
Exactly. Yes, I would submit that that's correct, Your Honor.
But hasn't that essentially been rejected as well in the case law? That if you wake up and you just can't remember, then that's not good enough. But if you actually pass away, and of course you can't testify, then that's why the Supreme Court limited it so specifically to the death.
But in this case, there is evidence. She did provide evidence of why she was on the road, which is she's on the road for a very specific purpose, and what happened just before she lost her memory, which is she's driving, she's in a moving vehicle, it's heading down the road, and she gets tunnel vision. And then the next memory is the tumbling. There's nothing in between there that there are no items that I could think of personally where something could have happened that wouldn't be compensable if she could have just said it. If she had just said, this car ran over in front of me, and then I ran off the road, or this deer ran in front of me, or my vision was lost, and my car I felt the car drifting off the road as I couldn't see.
We've had a lot of questions for you, and I've let you go considerably over an additional time, but would you like to wrap up very quickly?
I thank you all for your time and your questions today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alexander. Thank you, Ms. Hawkins. We will recount.